And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Medow. Good to be with you for the next 60 minutes. We'll get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. You could also chime in on the conversation using hashtag GiantsChat. Today we're going to cover the Stanford prospects. Matt Barrows of the Sacramento Bee will be joining us at the bottom of the hour, so stay tuned for that. In the meantime, we'll certainly cover some of the biggest storylines in the National Football League. And Paul, April has arrived. We are less than a month away from the draft.
Yeah, and I can't wait, Lance. I'm getting such an itchy trigger finger right now that...
When are you not? That's the big
question. I know. Yeah. I wish we could just fast forward and get right to it. You know, start the off-season workouts, which actually begins on April 17th, for those of you who don't know. Then you got the draft coming up right after that. Then you got the mini camp, actually the rookie mini camp and the mini camp. And I'm just so happy because the field outside here at Giants Stadium, the training facility outside the MetLife Stadium and where the Giants Quest Diagnostic Center is, had been torn up over the winter. They decided that they needed to restructure the field. So they tore up all the grass, and they are currently putting rolls of sod in on the field as we speak. And that for me, is really the first sign of spring.
Yes.
And that's got me just like the anticipation of seeing guys out on that field again. I'm overjoyed.
Yes, that's your true passion, staring outside the window and watching them lay down the new sod. Paul's doing play-by-play for a special video that will be airing on Giants.com. Stay tuned for that. Part of our off-season production.
They're rolling it out along the sideline. Look at that fit. It's perfect. Down to the five.
See, that gets us into the season mode. That's what we do. We watch the work that occurs in the off-season. But in all seriousness, the draft is nearing, and this is an opportunity for teams to start to evaluate, okay, this is what we accomplished in free agency. These are still some of the voids that we want to fill. And, you know, you also start to mark down and adjust your rankings so that you have a better idea as you get into the draft room who exactly your targets are going to be.
Yeah, you know, for me, the most interesting part of these last few weeks is finishing up the film study. But the guys with the teams have already done all of that. I mean, they're just polishing up some things. They're checking on medical records. They're going back and doing reevaluations. They're going to pro days just to confirm all the check marks that they've already got. For the most part, I would say the board's at least 90% done, if not more, already at this point. And there are just some minor tweaks that may be made over the final month of the wait until the picks are made. So, you know, most of the blood, sweat, and tears is already behind the personnel department.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. The other thing to point out is the annual meetings wrapped up last week, where all the owners as well as all the coaches met. Ben McAdoo did address the media. Probably the rule changes is the biggest storyline that came out of that. There are going to be some tweaks. Overtime, they did not change. They tabled that, but it's still a possibility as they meet later on this year, which was basically that they would shorten overtime to 10 minutes as opposed to have another full quarter for 15.
Yeah, you know, we went over them the other day, the rule changes with John, I guess at the end of last week. You may have done it also on one of the shows. And I didn't see anything that was so far out of whack that disturbed me that I would have put up a red flag and said, wait a minute, guys, what are you doing? I think for the most part, everything that they said made a lot of sense. I tell you, the one proposal that I really liked a lot, and, you know, I think it was just ridiculous why they didn't do it sooner, was the one where they said, well, can coaches get extra challenges if their challenges are correct?
You get a bonus, essentially.
I mean, to me, I always thought that was a no-brainer. I believe that's how it was in the USFL, as I recall, many years ago. And why not? Well, I mean, why does a coach who wins a challenge and gets the call correct for the official who screwed it up, why does he get penalized by losing that opportunity again? I never understood that.
No, I'm with you. I mean, in terms of rewarding them, so this way you have an advantage to perhaps review something a little bit later on in the game. I mean, that's something that I'm sure will continue to be discussed moving forward. But they have made tweaks, and they do that every season.
Yes.
This is nothing new. This is the trend that the competition committee and the owners look over and so forth. That is going to wrap up our opening segment here on Twitter. For those of you who want to continue to watch the program, head on over to Giants.com. Lance Medel, Paul DeTito with you here. Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, going over some of the notable storylines as we enter the month of April. Annual meetings just wrapped up. The draft is nearing. We're going to get into OTA mode, off-season spring mode soon as the players will return and get back on the field. We're going to open up the phone line. So two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. You want to weigh in on the draft. You want to weigh in on free agency. That is still in play in terms of adding some veterans on the last second before the draft. An opportunity for you to weigh in. We've got Mark on the line in New York. He gets us going on today's program. Mark, what's happening?
Yes. Hi, good day, gentlemen.
Hi.
Yeah, I called, of course, about the offensive line. I was getting a lot of people talking about Flowers. And I have to admit, it's a passing league, and we're trying to run the ball. And since we couldn't run, we had to lean on the pass. So I kind of – I'm not saying I gave him a pass, but in my opinion, I feel like if he could run – we could run the ball more. He could really inflict a lot of damage that when it came time for us to pass – by the way, I couldn't wait for Eli to get an O-line so he could dictate whether we decided to change to a pass or run, but that's a whole different side. Right. I'm just saying it just looks good on paper right now. But as for Flowers, I'm saying I feel like because we had to lean on having to pass so much, you never really get to see the full potential of a man that young, 20 when he was drafted. You never really get to see the full potential of him because you're asking him to block NFL. I love to say that in this line, NFL players, not college. You know, nobody was 20 years old when they're going up against him. So yeah, I'm just saying I feel with the way we're looking right now, if we could run the ball, I think his passing woes wouldn't be so heavy because we wouldn't have to pass as much. What do you guys think?
I'm going to go back to something that was told to me many, many years ago back in the 80s when I used to talk to the offensive linemen about schemes and blocking. And it still holds true today, no matter if it's a passing league or not. Offensive linemen have an easier time of run blocking than pass blocking. That will be true from here to eternity. That's just the way it is, okay? And every offensive lineman will tell you, not only is it easier to do, it is also easier to find a rhythm, and it is also easier to take the teeth out of a defensive player by pounding them and pounding them and pounding them with the run. And so it works both ways. It helps you, and it also hurts the other guy on the other side of the ball. So a power running game is critical.
I was going to say Doug Free is my example of that, but go ahead and continue.
Well,
it's
critical.
Doug Free guy, I don't think he's a good blocker for the pass, but because they run so much, you don't really notice him doing that. But
well,
please continue. That.
Certainly they play to his strength in that regard. Now, here's what I will tell you. The game certainly has evolved to the point where it's become much more of a pass-happy league. I don't think there's any question about that. But what I want to present to you is, look at the last 3 years of the NFL. I want you to go back and just look at each of the postseason teams for the last 3 years. And I would guarantee you that a predominant number of those teams had the ability to power run the football on occasion when they wanted to. They may not have had a great running game overall all the time for four quarters, but at the very least, they had the ability to keep a team honest and to run the ball in spots when they had to move the chains. And I would say to you, it is an anomaly over the last couple of years of ball. Because I think teams are finally starting to figure it out again. Look at the Titans. Look at the Cowboys. Yeah. Look at the Bills. Look at the Dolphins. Look at the Raiders. There are teams that are finally starting to figure it out that, you know what, playing video game football is not the way to go. You got to be able to still lean on that running game. And teams, it's coming full circle again. Teams are starting to figure it out.
Well, and with the exception of Tennessee, all those teams you named made the playoffs.
Yeah.
And Tennessee was a borderline team, and if Mariota doesn't get hurt, who knows how their season pans out. But they were a big turnaround for them was their offensive line, investing in the O-line and getting that running game going with DeMarco Murray.
Look, the Green Bay Packers of the last 10 years, as they've made the playoffs virtually as a habit, their better teams have been teams that were able to run the ball.
Yeah.
The Baltimore Ravens found out after their running game went to pot, that you know what? They're not a playoff team anymore. The Ravens have been a playoff team when they've run the ball. Anyway.
Well, that's all I really have. And I was just thinking about the draft, and I'll get off the air with this one. The reason why, oh, man, I don't know how you guys are going to take this. I feel like the team is looking so good that we should attack what I believe is weak while we still can. I think the O-line should go first and second round. I think we should solidify a right tackle and a right guard that we could actually have coming up. We don't even have to start. We can have all veterans on the line. And if somebody got hurt, I don't like to play music with chairs. I like to know who's going where, and let's keep the ball rolling. I really do believe that this year you're going to look at Flowers a lot differently. And it's not because he progressed. It's because we can run. If we can run when we want to. You know what? This goes to Odell, too, because Odell's a physical little dude, and he likes to fight and bump and push, but because we can't run, he can't block. So this is really going to look like we've been all of a sudden transformed, but this is who we really were, and we're just putting the pieces together to complete that. So I'll take anything you say off the air, and thanks for taking my call.
All right, Mark, appreciate the phone call. Brandon Marshall is also very effective as a blocker, and if he could get to the second level, then as the caller just alluded to, the wide receivers start to play a much bigger role in helping establish the running game. So, I mean, that would be a positive development for the entire team, not necessarily just for the offensive line. As far as going after offensive linemen or being heavy with offensive linemen with your first two picks, Paul, which the caller was alluding to, you know, I'm of the philosophy you don't just take guys for the sake of taking guys.
Agreed.
There has to be good value. So if you say to yourself, yes, we'd like to build up the depth chart on the offensive line, that's great, and every team should have that philosophy. But if the offensive linemen value-wise are not good in the first and the second round, then there's no point of saying, well, just because you want to build up the depth chart, we have to use our first two picks on that.
Yeah, I'm of the opinion the Giants do need to take an offensive tackle in this draft, and it should be by the third round. I think they need to get themselves a quality prospect who can at least add depth, if not competition, to what the Giants are trying to do with this offensive line. But it's apparent to me, after all that we've studied and what we found out at the combine, that the first-round offensive linemen in this draft are not your typical blue-chip, plug-and-play first-round offensive tackles. They're just not. And there are mixed reviews and questions about all of them. Now, if the Giants really think that there is a plug-and-play guy there at 23 and they take one, hallelujah. I'm not going to argue it because you guys know how much I value offensive linemen. And I, quite frankly, love to see offensive linemen taken in the first round because it's the trenches. That's where it's all built. However, in this particular draft, I don't know at 23 you're going to get a plug-and-play tackle. I just don't. And for that reason, you don't force it. You draft an offensive lineman who can enhance your depth and maybe compete. You're going to get one of those probably second, third, fourth round. And that's probably the way I would go. But, again, look, if Ramczyk is sitting there at 23 and the guy's got the best technique of any left tackle in this draft,
consider it there.
You certainly have to think about him. Now, if Njoku's sitting there at the same time,
then you really have to think about it.
I'm probably taking Njoku.
It's good to have options.
And you guys know, and you should have seen Schmelk. He turned even whiter than he is when I told him on the show last week that I would take Howard or Njoku if either one of them are there at 23.
Over an offensive lineman.
Over anybody else on the board. If Howard or Njoku were there, either one of them were there, I'm taking them at 23, and that's it. Betty, close the door because I'm done.
Well, with Howard, you're also getting a blocker, though, at that position, too.
Neither one of them are going to be there. Howard will be gone in the top 15, and Njoku is probably gone in the top 20.
I would agree with you, but listen, we've seen weird things develop during the course of a draft. Who knows? A move is made. Somebody falls. But I think going in, it's not a stretch to think that the two of them are going to be off the board. However, I don't think it's also a stretch to think that Ramczyk could be around at 23. I don't think that's a stretch.
I don't think that's a stretch at all.
Given his medical history and his injury history, I think it's possible he could be in the mix. But then it becomes, are you confident that this is not going to be a lingering issue health-wise and that he could get back on the field in the offseason and he could work him in the mix? Or is there some risk connected to it? I mean, that's going to be the question that any team, not just the Giants, would have to ask themselves if he's still around at that time.
Well, the things we heard about him, just to make it very clear to everybody, besides the medical, we also understand that he's going to have to get stronger and more powerful as he comes into the NFL. And we also have to understand that he only played one full year at Wisconsin. Okay? Before that, you're talking about a lower level of competition. He played JUCO before he wound up going to Wisconsin for a year. So, you know, all of a sudden now, after playing one year with the big boys, all right, those corn-fed cattle out there that they play in Wisconsin,
yes,
he's now coming into the NFL. And it's going to be quite an adjustment for him. So, you know, is he a plug-and-play player? Maybe. But am I sure? I'm not sure. Just not.
And if you take somebody in the first round, you want to be pretty sure.
You do. You do.
You don't want to necessarily take a guy that, there's potential, there's upside.
Again,
but
if they take him, I'm not going to cry. If they take him, I'm going to be like, okay, that's fine. Wonderful.
Well, and
but that means that they believe in him a lot more than maybe other people do or more than they're letting on. And I'll trust their judgment in that regard.
And remember, one of the themes, or at least that we were talking about even after the end of the season press conferences, was the desire for this team to bring in competition for multiple positions, mm-hmm, specifically on the offensive line. That would continue that theme if you use the 23rd overall pick on an offensive lineman. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Let's head back to the lines. We got Dino in Jersey. Dino, what's happening?
How you doing, guys? Second time caller. Love the show.
Great.
Appreciate it. Thanks for tuning in.
Very excited for the drafts coming up, as Paul alluded. I like the free agent acquisitions that we made, but now I'm reading things about if Reese will trade up in the first round. And there was a couple scenarios that if he was to trade up, which is not his history, whether or not...
Well, don't say that.
Oh, he's done that many times.
Dino, Landon Collins moved up for that, and then you also look at Ryan Nassib.
In the second round.
Yeah, but I mean, but the point is there's a track record there where they have moved up. That's the point. I mean, it may not be in the first round, but there's been acquisitions over the last 3 or 4 years where they have made some deals.
No question.
I think that's important to at least know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But in the first round, now let's try this, a couple of scenarios I had in mind. They were talking about if they were to move up, say, from 23 to maybe 12, between 12 and 15, and maybe get a sure shot, maybe like an O.J. Howard, or maybe another player they were targeting that could be an impact player right away. Now, I would think that you would have to give up too much for that. Now,
you're going to have to give up. You're going to have to swap picks and to give up your second rounder if you're going to move up into the 15 ballpark. That's the estimate based on the draft value trade chart that a lot of people mm-hmm. use as a guide. Again, it's not perfect. It's not an exact science, but that gives you a ballpark of what you'd have to part with. Would you be willing to go up to the 15 ballpark to draft, let's say, an O.J. Howard if you really wanted him that badly by giving up a second-round pick? I would consider that. I'm going to be honest with you. I'd think about it. I don't know that I'd pull the trigger, but I would think about it.
Okay, now how about this second scenario? What if we were to just stay at 23 and Njoku fell to us? Like, Paul, you said last week, I would pull the card, punch it in, and take Njoku. No-brainer.
I agree.
Okay, now the Raiders are picking after us. Say the Raiders or whoever's picking after the Raiders. Say we want to buy in back into the first round, and say there was a Cunningham available, or maybe a Reddick, or even
you want to buy back in? Hankton. You want to get a second first round pick beneath you?
No. Yeah.
So you want your pick?
You're keeping 23, and then you want something in addition to that.
Correct. Buy back in.
I don't think that's likely.
Round.
Yeah.
Maybe trade our second round pick and maybe like a third or fourth round pick for next year, and maybe get like a Cunningham if he's still on the board after we take Njoku, or even a McDowell if we don't take Hankins if he doesn't sign, or even Forrest Lamp, and secure two players that you don't know if that other second guy would fall to us in the second round.
I think it's much more likely that Jerry says, I'm not happy at 55. I'd like to move up, whether it's 5, 10 spots, or whatever it is, or even all the way up to the beginning of the second round, like he did do for Landon Collins.
Yeah.
Okay? I could see him doing something like that and getting much higher in the second round, saying, look, as somebody I really want, he's never making it to 55. I got to get up there. I could see that happening. In fact, I'm predicting that the Giants will make a trade in the first or second round because I think the team is playing for now. I don't think they're playing for 3 or 4 years down the road. I think they want to win a championship this year or next year. Look at the contracts, the way this roster is constructed. They're playing to make a run now. So
absolutely.
if there's a dangling carrot in front of them, I don't think they're going to hesitate to go up. But to go up into the first round and get a second first-round pick, the price is exorbitant. The contract situation does not really help you out a whole lot because now you got to guarantee first-round money for two guys instead of one. And I don't quite frankly think there's going to be anybody behind you in the first round that's going to be too anxious to drop out.
And keep in mind, Dino, there's a lot of depth in this draft, too. I mean, let's not overlook that.
There is.
So, I mean, if there's not a huge drop-off between the offensive lineman or the defensive lineman that you're looking at, I don't think it's necessary to move back into the first round, where even in their second-round position, I still think they get a quality player because there's a lot of depth at a lot of positions. If there was only depth in one position, I think maybe that changes your mindset. But when you're talking about tight end has depth, running back has depth, defensive back has depth, defensive lineman has depth, why would you all of a sudden bank on moving up into the first round when you probably could get some decent value a little bit later on? It's just not worth it.
Well, this is why I was asking you guys. You guys are the experts. And I was just going through my head all night thinking about this because I was reading all these scenarios. I'm saying to myself, well, what if that would something like that would work out? But would it be worth it to buy back into the first round, whether or not it would be value?
See, I would tell you this. I would tell you this, not just from a personnel perspective, but also from a financial perspective. If many of the players in the last 6 or 7 spots or whatever at the end of the first round are of roughly the same value as the first 10 or 12 players in the second round, well, to be honest, okay, you're talking about not just player value, but contract value, too. And from an economic perspective, if you believe that you can get what you need at a position that you're looking for and there's a guy you really like and you think there's a good chance you can get him early in the second round, then that's where you want to trade up and go get him. Much like Landon Collins. They knew exactly what they were doing when they made that move.
Yeah, you're right. But, Paul, I'm with you with the whole Njoku thing. I think he's going to be a real, real, real good player.
Yeah, so do I.
If he drops to us. My friend is a very big Hurricanes fan, and he said, if you guys can get him, grab him.
Yep. And that could be tricky. It's going to be close.
He has ties to Jersey, too. So that's, I'm sure, what also makes him attractive to at least maybe some of your friends and so forth.
Yeah, and I definitely, if he falls to us and there's a lineman, I definitely would take him over the lineman right now. Even though, like Paul says, he likes the trenches, but if Njoku's there, I would grab him.
I think Njoku's more of a can't-miss prospect, and that's why I would take him.
And it also depends on, you know, where the Giants, their thinking is at this point. You know, do they even want to bring in a tight end like that? I'm not saying that he doesn't have appeal, but I go back to the track record of this team. And, you know, aside from Jeremy Shockey.
Which, by the way, they traded up to get him.
Correct. But since then, the philosophy with the tight end position, and Dino, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in, Paul, has been undrafted guys. Taking chances on developing players as opposed to going for the home run. And Njoku would be the home run angle is what I'm talking about. You go for the name commodity.
Howard would be a grand slam.
Howard would be a grand slam, if you want to use the baseball analogy. But those two would fall in line with the Shockey line of thinking is my point.
Well,
they would not fall in line with the Jake Ballards of the world and some of these other players or even the free agents like Martellus Bennett.
Right.
And so forth.
Well, because you're going along the lines of hey, go after a legitimate potential star player at the position as opposed to a plug-in complementary player,
yes,
which is what they have done for many years since Shockey was traded.
Yeah, that's been the philosophy. The philosophy has been we'll have one guy that can block, we'll have one guy that we think can do a different role, yeah, and mix and match.
Well, quite frankly, Ellison is the blocking tight end right now. In fact, we got a question on Twitter asking us where they think he's going to line up. I do think he's going to line up mostly at tight end, but he will also line up at H-back and fullback on occasion. I'm sure of that. That's why they got him. But I think that you could very much – you could talk about how, you know, getting a Njoku, so you run double tight end. What's the problem? You run him and Ellison out there.
Yeah, Ellison can block, and then Njoku can run
and
routes.
So,
of course, that's very feasible.
That's why, to me, it's not a problem. Because they've already got a blocking tight end in Ellison, I don't mind if they go after a pass-receiving tight end like Njoku now. I didn't want Ebron a couple years ago, A, because I didn't think he wanted a block. I thought he was half of a player, and I thought that at that point in time, the Giants did not have enough of blocking available where they could have the luxury of going after a guy who was just going to catch passes. Well, guess what? With Ellison here now, you could go double tight end, and Njoku goes out for a pass, and Ellison helps block. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, the addition of Rhett Ellison, I think, gives you some flexibility in terms of your thinking of what you want to do with the receiving tight end. But then again, they still have a few other guys currently on the roster that they may want to continue to develop, like a Will Tye. Don't forget about Matt Lacoste. Mm-hmm. You know, he is still very relevant to the conversation, even mm-hmm. though he's been banged up each of the last few seasons. All right, we'll get back to more on the Giants front and their draft plans in a little bit, plus your phone calls. But each and every program leading up to the draft, we've been previewing a group of upcoming prospects. And today our focus is going to be on Stanford. And we are now joined by Matt Barros, football writer for the Sacramento Bee, also covers the San Francisco 49ers. He's kind enough to give us a few minutes. Matt, Lance Metal, Paul DeTino, Big Blue Kickoff Live, Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Everything's good. How are you guys?
Doing very well, Matt. And let's focus here on the Stanford class, and then we may want to touch on some other NFL-related subjects because we know that you have your pulse on what's going on in the Bay Area. But with respect to the Stanford class, Solomon Thomas, their defensive end, and Christian McCaffrey, their running back, I think are by far their top two. Let's start with Thomas, Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year this past season. From what I've read, Matt, there are a number of people that are not necessarily sold that he's at a definitive position, that he's maybe more of a tweener. Where do you see him at the NFL level? Is he that defensive lineman, or is he more of the type of guy that could very well play at the linebacking position?
I think he's on the defensive line. I mean, he did all of his damage or most of his damage last year against guards and centers, just overpowered them, was quicker than them, and really blew up the inside of opposing teams' offenses. The issue is that he's 6'3 and 272 pounds, and nobody believes that he's going to be able to pack on a lot more than that. I remember that Bryant Young, the famous 49ers interior lineman, was about that same size coming out of college. He got well over 300 pounds and, you know, very strong, muscular guy and played on the interior. That's the question with Thomas. Is he tapped out right now in terms of size and muscle? He is quick, so I think a lot of teams probably see him as that five technique, that defensive end, either in a 3-4 or 4-3. Standing up, did very well at the combine with his 40 time and some of the other tests. He just didn't do any of that in college. I mean, you know, most of the time, like I said, he was on the interior of the line. So it would be a bit of a leap of faith if you were drafting him with the thought that you're going to move him to, say, an outside linebacker in a 3-4 system. But, you know, having said all that, he's fantastic. He's strong, high character guy, everything you want. The question is, where exactly are you going to play him?
Now, Matt, assuming he's going to play at about 270, 275, which is where I've seen him listed at, let's say he doesn't gain any more weight. To me, the more intriguing question is, can he slide down in a sub-package and play inside as one of your pass-rushing defensive tackles with the kind of attributes that he has? Does he have the quickness to be able to do that and create some mismatches against plodding interior linemen on the offensive side of the ball?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's where he did his damage, like I said, at Stanford. I think the ideal is that you run a 4-3 system. You play him at that left defensive end spot, you know, the strong side spot on base downs. And then, like you said, you move him inside to the interior to defensive tackle on passing downs. And I think that's probably what teams that are contemplating taking him high, taking him in the top 10, are figuring they would do if they landed Solomon Thomas.
And that's an example of how he was lined up in a variety of different positions, as you alluded to, at Stanford. I also noticed that he had 7 penalties this past season, Matt. Is he a gambler type of defensive lineman, and how concerning is that maybe as he makes the move to the NFL?
Yeah, he's a timer. He times the snap, and that's how he beats a lot of these guys. I mean, he's a smart guy. He's figured out, you know, if I get off the snap as the ball's moving, I can get away with that. It's concerning in the sense that you have to figure out, if you're an NFL team, whether he was doing that with his brain or whether he is quick twitch enough to do that on his own on the NFL level. I mean, I think it's probably somewhere in between. He's not the fastest guy off the line of scrimmage, but he's certainly fast enough. I think he's definitely a top 10 pick, but like I said, it's, you know, going to a team that has the right plan for him, the right defensive fit, scheme-wise, for Solomon Thomas.
Right. You want me to go to the elephant in the room here, Lance?
Why don't you?
All right, we might as well. Enough of time on Thomas. Christian McCaffrey, a son of a former Giants receiver, Eddie McCaffrey, as you know very well. So much discussion about him, my friend, because we were out at the Combine in Indianapolis, and there was such a mixed bag on him. Is he going to be a primary back? Is he going to be a third down back? Is he going to be a multi-purpose, versatile animal that just hurts you in so many ways and that, you know, defenses are going to be going crazy trying to chase him all over the field? Then, of course, you got a problem with an offensive coordinator who may not know what to do with him and then waste his talents, and he may turn out not to be nearly as productive as a lot of people think he will be. What camp are you in? What are you hearing most from the people who are out there as to what would be the best situation for him to land in?
You know, he had his pro day a couple of weeks ago, and he did everything. He did no running back drills. He did everything at receiver and returner, and his receiving was spectacular. I mean, he was quick, great hands, great leaping ability, all of that, you know, which is to say, again, just like Solomon Thomas, if you're a team and you're thinking about taking Christian McCaffrey, you have to have a plan for him. I mean, I can see him, fulfilling a role like Randall Cobb does for the Green Bay Packers. I mean, on the field, just about every snap, sometimes at wide receiver, sometimes in the backfield, a lot of times in the slot. If that's your plan for him, I think that he can do all that. And I think he would be worthy of a first-round pick. If your plan is for him to be your every down back and to give him 25 carries, 18 of which are between the tackles, I don't think he's going to last half a season.
Yeah, and I'm in your camp with that, for sure.
Yeah, so he can do a little bit of everything. And then you throw in the fact that he's a really good punt returner, too,
yeah.
A very good punt returner. So you're automatically getting that out of him that first year. He can be your kick returner, your punt returner, and come in on third down at a very minimum. And I think the bottom line is that a lot of teams think that he can do a lot more than that and sort of be that quasi running back wide receiver that's become so in vogue these days with guys like Cobb and Percy Harvin and whatnot.
Now, you mentioned first round, and a lot of people do believe that's where he's going to wind up for sure. I mean, I don't know anyone says he's going to be a second-round pick. But from your understanding, from the scuttlebutt that's going on in California, are we talking as high as 15, as low as 25? Where do you think most people believe realistically he's going to fall?
I don't have it in front of me, but wherever the Denver Broncos are picking, I think that's a good first guess because they've been all over him. And
really?
Obviously, his dad has a background with the Broncos as well and lived out there.
Well, remember, his dad played for the Giants first, too, so that doesn't mean that they'd be out of that mix. But I'll be honest with you. I think the Giants have a third-down back in Chamberlain, and they've got a situational slasher with Paul Perkins from UCLA. You guys know all about him out in California. For me, McCaffrey doesn't fit here because I think the Giants have two guys who do a bunch of the things that he would do.
Yeah, and I think in this day and age where offensive tackles and guards are so hard to come by that if you're the Giants and you can grab one in that first round, that's what you do. You get that big ticket item out of the way and then try to, you know, get the bells and whistles later in the draft.
Plus, the injury rate is so high at the running back position as well. We're talking with Matt Barrows, football writer for the Sacramento Bee, talking about the Stanford prospects, also covers the San Francisco 49ers. One other one for me. Did
Go
you
ahead.
Want to throw in an
Well, is going to be a defensive back?
No, I was going to ask a question about McCaffrey.
Oh, go ahead.
I got
a DB I want to ask you about, Matt.
Okay, well, we'll get to the other prospects, but I had a follow-up for you, Matt, with respect to McCaffrey. You know, you talked about if he wants to be a 20-carry type of back, you don't see that being a success for him at the next level. But I think what was interesting, Stanford did utilize him, and correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, in short-yarded situations, also in the red zone. From what you've seen, can he flourish in those situations if you're a team that says, you know what, even though he's that Mr. Versatility and he's a guy that can run on the outside and catch passes, if we want to use him in those short yard situations in the red zone, can he do that at the next level?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Stanford is a very much a, you know, might is right, old-fashioned style pro offense. So there was a lot of between the tackles running, and he did a lot of that. And, you know, what he was really good at was finding space where there was little space. I mean, he was very good at – he's got great eyes, great vision, great cutback ability, all that. And, you know, a lot of times he's compared to somebody like Reggie Bush. Bush did most of his damage, 95% of his damage, running to the outside on the, you know, wide side of the field. McCaffrey wasn't that way. He was able to break some long runs that way, but a lot of it was between the tackles. So he is capable of that. My concern is he's not that big. I mean, he's not that big, doesn't have a very big lower body. Obviously, isn't all that powerful, as we saw from his bench press reps at the combine. And he was nicked a bit last year. So you put all that together and you project that in the pro game, and he's going to get hit a lot more. So, again, I don't think that his best bet is that workhorse Leonard Fournette type of running back.
All right, I got to ask you, Matt, about a guy who probably a lot of people here on the East Coast don't know about. He's a dark horse to be drafted, but I just got a feeling about this guy that he's going to wind up making a roster. Strong safety Dallas Lloyd, the guy who converted from quarterback. Now, you know him, obviously, because you've seen him play. I think he's got some definite NFL potential, 6'2", 213. I know he ran in the 4.6s at the combine. But this, to me, is a third-day sleeper pick who's going to surprise somebody and make a roster because he's a football player.
Yeah, that's the type of guy, I mean, if you're trying to make a splash on the third day, and the 49ers have done this a lot in the past, these sort of conversion guys that play different positions in college, and you project them somewhere else in the pro. He's got all the athleticism and, as you mentioned, the size that you want. He's the prototypical strong safety size. Everybody always says, safety is the quarterback of the defense. So he's got that going for him, too. But, you know, again, it's a leap of faith. It's a projection. That's why you use your sixth or seventh round pick on that type of player. Yeah.
Well, and I think another projection from Stanford would also perhaps, Matt, be Michael Rector, the wide receiver. Seems to have the vertical speed, but there's questions about how effective his hands can be. What have you seen out of Rector? And, you know, I've seen a lot of comparisons that maybe he can be in line with the Doug Baldwins of the world, who Doug Baldwin did go undrafted and then has carved out a nice career with the Seahawks. Can he follow that narrative? I'm not saying he's the same player, but if you took a chance on him, could you see him perhaps thriving in the NFL?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's got that long speed. He's got good size. He didn't have Andrew Luck throwing to him at Stanford. So his numbers are not all that impressive, but they they haven't had the greatest quarterbacks there the last few years. He's intriguing. And then Francis Owusu, who's the brother of a more famous Owusu, is also coming out, and he had a very good pro day, I thought. He ran under 4.4, 6'2", a little under 6'3". He's another guy that, you know, again, leap of faith, probably an undrafted free agent type of guy, but probably is going to be a priority because of that speed size factor, and Rector has the same thing.
Matt Barrows from the Sacramento Bee joining us on the program. I'm going to hold you over for one more here, Matt. And I don't know, how much did you see the California Golden Bears at all this year?
A bit. Yeah, they've got that, what they call that, you know, golden gun or something. One of these up-tempo offenses. So it's very hard to kind of scout these guys and project how they're going to do on the NFL level.
Well, I did want to get one question in about quarterback Davis Webb, who's had his injuries. Of course, he went to the to one of the All-Star games and did okay there. But, you know, for a team like the Giants that's looking for potentially a young quarterback to fit onto the roster, I don't know how late he's going to be. Some people think he could be a second or third rounder. Some people think a fourth or fifth rounder. To me, I love his size. I like that he's an old-fashioned pocket passer, looks downfield to let it go. I kind of think he'd be a diamond in the rough that you might be able to get, if you could, on the third day, hide him for a year, get him some experience, and then maybe down the road you might be able to polish up a gem. Am I totally off base here as someone who's gotten to see him maybe in person and I have not?
No, I think you're right on in that. And I kind of second that. I would say that the Giants are a nice spot for him. I mean, a place where you've got a quarterback that you can learn from who doesn't have, you know, a dramatically different skill set than you, A, and B, you know, a place where you can learn for a few years. So I think that would be a real nice fit in the second, third, fourth round. As you said, a lot of discrepancy on where people think he's going to go draft-wise. But, you know, some people think that he's the fourth or the fifth best passer in this draft.
He can throw it. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
He's got experience. I mean, he was at Texas Tech for a while, got beaten out by Patrick Mahomes there,
right,
had to go elsewhere. So he's been around the block. He's taken his lumps. He's got a maturity factor about him as well that I think will play well on the NFL level.
Well, speaking of the Giants and perhaps Bay Area connections, I want to switch over to two NFL players that are already established, and there's a connection between the Niners and the Giants this offseason, Matt. A player that you covered, Shane Drone, has now joined the Giants. He's supposed to add some depth to the backfield. We know he can catch the ball. He's a versatile guy. What is something perhaps that maybe gets overlooked about his game that you think he can add to the Giants' backfield that fans may have not been able to pick up?
He came in 2015 to San Francisco off the street. I think he was living in Detroit. And they signed him on a Monday, and he was starting by the following Sunday. So he's a professional. He's a smart guy. He's been in just about every system there is. So it's not going to take him long to pick the Giants offense. He's a jack of all trades. He can do a little bit of everything, including special teams. Very good special teamer. So you know, he's somebody, if your starter goes down, you're going to be in good hands. Got a lot better as a third down back over this past season. So I think he added that to his arsenal as well. Just, you know, well-rounded, not spectacular at any one thing, but very good at multiple things.
I was going to ask you, I don't know how much you got a chance to look at DJ Fluker with the Chargers at all, but, you know, certainly more than we got to see him out here on the East Coast. The Giants are taking a flyer on a prove-it contract with him. Impressions of what he might bring in terms of upside?
Well, just a big body. I mean, I don't really know him that well, but going back to what we were talking about as far as the Giants' top draft pick, it's just so hard to find tackles these days. It's hard to find them in free agency, and then, you know, they're not being developed like they once were on the college level. So if you've got a chance to bring in an experienced guy like Fluker, you do it, and obviously New York did.
Last one for me, Matt, before we let you go. Transitional offseason here for the San Francisco 49ers, and the Giants are going to be heading out to the Bay Area this season. New GM in John Lynch, new head coach in Kyle Shanahan. I mean, what's your outlook for this team as they still need to find perhaps an answer at quarterback, but they've been pretty aggressive in free agency thus far. I mean, how quickly do you think they're going to turn things around out there?
I think that this is a two-year plan. They have been aggressive in free agency, but there haven't been any real blockbusters that they brought in. This is more kind of creating a foundation this year. And then I think that they're going to make their big move at quarterback. Brian Hoyer is the guy who's probably going to be the starter this season. Doesn't exactly blow your hair back. Brian Hoyer has no hair to blow back. But my point is that I think it's next year that they're going to make their big move, probably Kirk Cousins, if he's available as a unrestricted free agent or maybe in the draft. So, like I said, I think this is a two-year plan. I think the 49ers expect to be better than 2-14 in the upcoming season. But I think 8-8 would just they'd be over the moon for that type of record. And it's after that that they feel like they're going to have to start making their move.
Matt, I will tell you one thing before you go. As you enjoy 49ers football this year, you will have a wonderful time talking to Robbie Gould. We had him here with the Giants for almost two-thirds of the season this past year. You got him as a free agent. Great guy, fun guy, terrific locker room guy, good teammate. He's good stuff, and I think you'll enjoy very much having him around.
All right, great. And I believe he didn't have a miss when he joined the Giants last season.
That is correct.
He was terrific. Yep. He was terrific. Guy's a pro. He's a pro's pro, and good stuff. I'm glad that he was able to find himself another contract.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a nice fit in that locker room.
Well, Matt, listen, we greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Matt Barrows, football writer for the Sacramento Bee, kind enough to give us a few minutes, and look forward to talking to you down the line.
Okay,
thank you, Matt.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
You got it. All right, Matt Barrows with the latest from the Stanford prospects as well as the San Francisco 49ers, as it's going to be interesting to see how football pans out in the Bay Area, given the fact that the Raiders are going to be on the move to Vegas in 2020.
You know, I don't know what you do when you're in an NFL city and you cover that team, or you do the games or the pregame show and you do all the wraparound shows with that team, and all of a sudden they move away. Do you just not cover the NFL anymore? Do you move with the team? Do you decide you're going to have to relocate because, after all, that's what you do? I remember Jack Snow, who was with the Los Angeles Rams for many years, former player, moved with them to St. Louis. And then, of course, they moved out. Subsequent to that, I think at some point he eventually retired. But, I mean, that's, to me, I'll be honest with you, I would be devastated.
Oh, are you kidding me? I didn't even have to answer that question or ask you that question because I knew what the answer was
right?
going to be.
I could not even imagine covering the NFL, being in an NFL city, and then finding out that the team is going away. Those people in Baltimore when the Colts left, the people in Cleveland when the Browns left.
And that was in the middle of the night, by the way, too.
Well, Baltimore situation. Baltimore. I can't even imagine that. How do you lose your franchise? I mean, especially if that's part of what your career is.
Of course,
that's what you work in.
You're tied into that, yeah. I mean, I think if you work for the team.
Wow.
It's easier to obviously move with the team, as we saw with the Rams, who made the move from St. Louis to L.A.
Yeah, but if your roots, though, are in that original city,
correct.
It's still pretty
hard
to go.
You may not want to uproot your family and so forth.
Pretty hard to go.
It's a tough decision that anybody's going to make. But I think you were also looking at it through the angle of, which I think is interesting, if you're somebody on the broadcasting team or you're somebody who covers the team for the local paper and you don't work directly for the team, you know, then usually somebody in the new market would then take on that role. Just like the St. Louis papers are not covering the Rams anymore. That's a Los Angeles covered
market.
So, I mean, that does change the game, yeah.
And that's tough.
Absolutely. And plus, what's unique about the Oakland situation is they're staying in Oakland for at least the next season. What happens in 18 and 19 will depend on whether the team wants to take an option on the lease for the Oakland Coliseum or get a temporary stay elsewhere. I mean, there's chatter that they may even share Levi's Stadium with the San Francisco 49ers for a season or two. So that's why I said football in the Bay Area is going to be very interesting.
So how many media people are now applying for jobs in or around Las Vegas, hoping that, okay, within a couple of years, they'll be covering the NFL.
Absolutely. Well, the radio stations, I'm sure, are starting to jockey for the radio rights, too.
Guarantee it.
Yeah, it'll give them – listen, when was the last time that they had professional sports that they could cover on a consistent basis in their own backyard?
The only thing they had was minor league hockey.
Yeah.
And, of course, they had one of those minor league football teams, too, for a while. Las Vegas Outlaws.
Yeah.
I remember those guys years ago. They may have had arena football, too, at one point.
But did they have an XFL team, too?
Yeah,
I mean,
but that's...
I know that lasted. I'm just
that doesn't
throwing that
even
out there. Yes.
Put a blip on the
radar.
Well,
I mean, clearly UNLV is the big thing to cover out there. But what's also notable is not only are they getting the football team, remember, hockey's coming to Las Vegas, too. So
yeah.
You're getting the NHL and the NFL in a very short period of time.
No.
So it's all of a sudden becoming a professional sport.
I still feel bad for the Oakland fans, no matter how you cut it.
Especially since this is the second time in which their team has relocated. Oakland to L.A. is a little different. Now we're talking about Oakland to Las Vegas. And our star producer, David Dominic, says arena football and the XFL were both called the Las Vegas Outlaws to get the correct name. No disrespect
I didn't say
to
that.
The former. I think you were in that ballpark.
I said the Las Vegas
you
Outlaws.
You said the Outlaws? Okay. The XFL, though, had the same name. That's what he was going
to
say.
Oh.
Yes. In addition
to
your point.
The XFL doesn't count.
Boy, it's sour subject that we're bringing up with the XFL. I thought you mentioned you saw the documentary. Didn't you tell me that?
I did, and the documentary
was
fun.
Nice. Yeah.
But one of their players' name was He Hate Me. Rod Smart, who later played for the Panthers and Eagles,
yeah,
I believe.
Gave it to the NFL.
But the dude's name was He Hate Me.
What's wrong with a little flair? Nickname.
If your name is He Hate Me, then your league doesn't exist.
League
cannot have a player's name He Hate Me.
This is the problem. Good luck trying to explain to an old school philosopher when it comes to football something about the new regime.
The rugby scrum instead of a kickoff? Come on.
Well, that's how players got hurt. So I was not necessarily a fan of that.
That was a bad idea.
Yeah, he also, by the way, appeared in the Super Bowl with the Panthers, too.
Yes.
He Hate Me.
The only thing that was good about the XFL, and there was one good thing, they were the ones who really started to implement the hanging camera.
The camera, the technology.
From overhead.
That's probably the biggest takeaway.
That's
no
the
doubt.
Biggest thing that came out.
Yeah.
In the USFL, the biggest thing was the two-point conversion. That wound up coming into the NFL. XFL was the hanging camera from the wires.
Well, and that's
the overhead sky cam.
That's a trend overall, Paul. Usually whenever a league folds or a team folds, there's usually some type of a takeaway.
They want to steal something.
Correct.
ABA with the three-point shot. Remember that?
Yep.
You're old enough to remember the ABA?
I remember the ABA. Well, but keep in mind, the new ABA form. No, because I called games for one of the local new ABA teams.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
They actually came back.
New ABA.
Well, I'm just saying.
The fraud ABA.
Well, because I don't think this happened in the original ABA, but the new ABA, what they did was if you made a steal in the backcourt, twos became threes and threes became fours.
That's...
I know. I figured you'd love that. That's why I wanted to throw it out
there. That's along
the
lines of the XFL, folks.
Okay. Correct. Yes. No touchy-feely with the rules here. Yes.
Unbelievable.
We don't want to mix and match here. Well, let's check out Twitter. We'll also reopen up the phone lines at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. If you want to weigh in on any draft topics, you want to talk about the Giants' free agent plans, free agent additions, and so forth, feel free to give us a ring. But let's check out some more questions here that I know are coming in on Twitter and so forth. Freddie at FreddieJ_23 says, can this be the year that the streak ends of P-Dot's guys he wants being drafted before the Giants pick? You going to go out on a limb and maybe make a prediction there?
Look, I've already said that if Howard or Njoku are there, I would take one of them hands down. I have moved off the trenches for those two guys and those two guys alone. The problem being, I know they're going to be gone. They just have to be. Because there are two teams out there who have a picture of my face on their draft board, in their draft rooms, and they're throwing darts at it as we speak. So, no, the players that I want for the Giants in the first round, they're going to go. It happens all the time.
Well,
it happens all the time.
I'm bringing up the latest.
But I finally got Fluker. Finally got him. Took
After
me a long
fact,
time.
But yes.
Took me a long time, but I finally got him.
Here is the NFL.com mock draft. They have four people that put together a mock
Do
draft.
Any
and they
of them have
them.
Either tight end lasting to 23?
Well, that's what I'm checking, too. And then I also wanted to see who they have going to the Giants. Let's see.
This is the new one now, right?
Yes, these are new ones. This was updated about a day or two ago.
Brand new one.
They have O.J. Howard. This is the first guy. This is Chad Reuter, number 9.
Yeah.
To the Bengals. And then let's see if they have another tight end. Then they have Njoku going to Tennessee at 18.
Exactly.
And then they have Ryan Ramczyk going to the Giants at 23.
Which is fine.
That's that one. Then the next mock draft, this is Charlie Casserly.
Casserly has
O.J. Howard going 12th to the Browns. And then he has to the Giants Ryan Ramczyk. He does not have Njoku going before the Giants select.
How about that?
That's very interesting. Actually, now that I'm looking at it, I'm going to take a glance here just in case I skipped over. It does not look like he has Njoku going in the first round, according to Charlie Casserly.
Whoa.
Yeah, he does not have him. The only tight end he has is O.J. Howard going in the first round.
So here's Charlie, I love it. Giants take Ramczyk and trade up to get the first pick in a second round and get Njoku.
And they get it. Well, but you know what? I know we chuckle and we laugh about this, but I'm glad you brought that up because think about it. Landon Collins, the conversations
which
went
he was
the
a
other gauge because he fell through.
He was
the
a potential by some people to be late first round.
But then when he didn't go, then all of a sudden the Giants are like, "Wow, you know, we're starting up day two.
He's still there.
Let's make a move." So you're right. Maybe something like that happens. You make your first round pick, and Njoku is one of the other guys high on your board. He falls through. That changes your game plan heading into day two. Okay, Lance Zierlin. Let's see what he has. O.J. Howard going 8th to the Panthers. And then he also has him potentially being traded to the 49ers after he's selected.
Okay, because they have Olsen, of course.
Yes, Carolina has Greg Olsen. Then he has the Giants taking Malik McDowell from Michigan State, the defensive tackle.
Quality player.
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of him. Really like him as a player. And then he has Njoku going to Pittsburgh at the 30th overall selection.
Hmm.
So that is his projection. Then the last one for NFL.com's mock drafts is Daniel Jeremiah. He has O.J. Howard going 12th, like Charlie Casserly, to the Browns. Then he has the Giants taking Hassan Reddick, the defensive end out of Temple. And then he has Njoku going right before the Giants to the Dolphins at 22. So three out of the four have both tight ends
gone
in the first round. Not all of them have them gone by the time the Giants.
Two of them have them both gone.
And then one of them doesn't even have Njoku going in the first round.
Okay.
So there you go.
So the odds are 50-50, according to NFL.com at the moment, that I would get a shot at one of those two tight ends if I was on the board at 23. And you know what that means. The 50 that's going against me is going to happen.
Yes. Percentages won't necessarily align in your favor. And 50% of them also say that the Giants are going to be in a position to take Ramczyk, the tackle out of Wisconsin. Two of them say that. I like all the picks that they project, by the way, for the Giants here.
All those guys,
I think all of them make sense.
Actually have value at 23, and you could also make an argument that there's need there. Remember, Reddick would be a linebacker for the Giants. He would not be a defensive end.
But he could be a guy that at times, like Devon Kennard, you could bring up to the line. I don't think he could rule that out.
I'm not so sure that I wouldn't take Cunningham over Reddick, to be honest with you, as the outside linebacker, because he's proven to be more well-rounded at the college level. Reddick may project as somebody who can do all those things and may even be a better player. But Cunningham at this point is more of a proven player based on what he was doing in college.
And the competition in the
SEC.
He's the linebacker at Vanderbilt.
So, but I mean, I don't have a problem with the value of any one of those picks at 23 for the Giants.
Yeah, and that's what the fun of looking at these mock drafts is, just to get an idea of how other people are viewing and based on what they're hearing. So that's four people who work for NFL.com, and the opinions are all across the board.
Here's the good news, okay? This draft is so deep at so many different positions, including some spots where the Giants are thin, that they are very, very likely to get useful guys, or I should say useful prospects. You never know how useful a guy they're going to be till they get here. But they're very, very likely to get useful prospects at spots they need.
Let's just take a quick glance at Twitter before we wrap things up. Bill at Bill_Norris550. He says, would not be upset if the Giants got Christian McCaffrey when they select at 23. based on what we just heard from Matt Barrows and his versatility. And then Ben Gruen at Gruen Ben, we were bringing up nicknames that you weren't fans of. So he throws out, what about Chad Ochocinco? No opinion. The artist formerly known as Chad Johnson.
Yeah, whatever.
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 Right. Well, we thought we'd get maybe some type of reaction out of you. But
But by the way, McCaffrey's a good value at 23. I just don't like the fit. That's not to say he shouldn't be a in the 20s value. I could absolutely understand if somebody in the early 20s wanted to take him. You could not criticize them for that.
No, not at all.
The question is, how would you use him and what do you have on your roster already?
And based on going back to what Matt said in our interview earlier in the program, there is going to be a team, Paul, that's in the first round, and they're very high on McCaffrey. And the reason why they're very high on it is because if you ask the coaching staff, they'd be like, this is how we're going to use McCaffrey on
day
one
has to happen.
When he arrives in camp.
That's what must
happen.
They have
it all mapped out, and they know exactly what they
want
to do with him.
Yes, the team that takes him must have a plan already put together that the GM can say to the coach, what are we going to do? Oh, yeah, you're going to do that and that with him? Great, because we've seen him do that. He's great at that. We have a need for that. Bang, take him. If that line of communication does not happen and they are not totally on the same page about that, you don't take this player. You just don't.
Now, he had thrown out the Denver Broncos, given Ed McCaffrey's ties there. Denver picks 20th. And I'm looking at these NFL.com mock drafts. The first one has McCaffrey going 20th to Denver.
There you go.
Based on those projections.
And that's fine. Good.
And he could very well wind
and
up.
And he fits there well.
And they need help in terms of their running game.
Absolutely do.
They have had some issues on the ground. He would actually be a very good fit. And I'm sure John Elway wouldn't mind his former teammate's son on the roster, given he's got a full scouting report, I'm sure, from Ed McCaffrey firsthand. Well, that's going to wrap up Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Certainly appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets as well. All week long, we'll continue to preview more and more draft classes. Tomorrow, the focus is going to be on Michigan, and then we'll have different schools each and every other day throughout the course of the week. So enjoy the rest of your Monday. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com.